Today, it's Edwin's Property Rant on a Monday, episode 4. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And just before I start, a quick reminder that tomorrow, Tuesday evening at 8pm Sydney time, I'll be running the next DFA live stream event with Chris Bates, a mortgage broker, and Chris and I will be discussing the property market once again and getting his first-hand experience of how the banks are dealing with underwriting at the moment, whether lending standards are tighter or looser, and anything you want to ask, because you can ask Chris live via the YouTube chat and get a response. So I look forward to seeing you tomorrow evening, Tuesday, 8pm Sydney time. All the links are in the comments below. And just as I cross to Edwin, let me just also add that his connection was a bit flaky tonight, so in fact he will freeze a few times through the show, but nevertheless, I think it's still perfectly viewable. Today I'm joined again by property insider Edwin Almeida. Hi, Edwin.
John Farnham Almeida, thanks, Martin. Yeah, I thought I'd sport the Johnny Farnham look. Yeah, the hair's still not as long as what I want it to be, but it only grows half a centimetre a week or so. But maybe in a few weeks we'll do it again.
Yeah, I have to work a bit harder. But track record has now been set. Most of the conversations about the posts with you are about your hair.
Well, yeah, look, I really want to divert the conversation from the hair to real property matters. Particularly when our friends down in Melbourne, they're being locked up. There are new thought police laws going to be invoked and so forth. I mean, pretty soon we're going to start seeing Chairman Dan going around and welding people in the high-rise apartments. I would have liked for the state governments to do that before they were actually occupied, lock them down because they're unsafe as it is anyway. So there's a lot happening down in Melbourne.
Oh, there is, absolutely. And the data is appalling when it comes to, the lack of momentum in property, but more broadly, lack of momentum in the small business sector down there as well. It is, the epicentre of now not only the virus, but effectively the economic outfall. Unfortunately, this is going to have a very significant long-term impact. One of the reasons why I continue to argue that there's no V-shaped recovery here, it's going to be a long, slow grind.
Look, you're absolutely right. They make up close to 30% of the economy as it is. Anyway, 24% or 27%, whatever it is, it's going to have a huge, huge, huge ramifications all around. And we've only just started to scratch the surface. I mean, yourself and Tarek talk about it regularly and bring forth very strong and very valid and on-point arguments that the mainstream, the greater public need to hear it, and the mainstream are not reporting. As much as we jest about what's happening, it's a serious matter what's happening down in Melbourne, but as much as we jest about it, I was talking to some of my colleagues and we were actually starting to seriously think about and talk about that quite possibly a large number of people may well be migrating out of Melbourne. We threw some thoughts around, and I tend to think that a lot, if they do leave Melbourne, a lot won't be parking themselves in Sydney. One, it's too costly at the moment. Two, if you're going to move out of Melbourne, why come to Sydney? Why not go all the way to Queensland? I think Queensland's starting to become a very attractive address for a lot of people, perhaps. They're just thoughts that we throw around looking at the property market and seeing what's going to influence it in the future.
Well, I can certainly tell you that the rental availability close in to the centre of Melbourne is very, very high. But if you go out to some of the regional areas around the peninsula or even into rural Victoria, there the rentals are actually much tighter. And you can almost see an inverse relationship between the two. So I think there are some people who've moved out of town and are looking for, you know, a Victorian sanctuary. But I also see in some of my conversations with Queensland real estate agents up and down the Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast, less in Brisbane itself, but there is also a lot of interest as well there. And in fact, some, not many, but some, are buying sight unseen via online.
Yeah, look, as we spoke last week with regards to working from home, and if the business is going to allow you to work from home in Melbourne or work from home in the Gold Coast or work from home in Sydney, whatever it may be, or there may be decisions that they make, or there may be the actual business owners that are going to be leaving Melbourne altogether and reestablishing their businesses in other cities, other towns. It's going to be an interesting turn of events as it unfolds. Nonetheless, it's going to be, I don't do a lot in Melbourne. From time to time I visit it, but you have a lot more research there and more contacts there than what I would have. But it certainly is an interesting turn of events. And look, it may have a bit of an impact here as well, but I still think that overall, one of the things that many in the mainstream have forgotten is the oversupply that we've had for many years. And it's going to take a lot more than Melbournians or anybody other, anyone else to come, particularly in Sydney, in our own backyard, to absorb not only apartments but medium density townhouses or and also freestanding homes all around Sydney with all the subdivisions that have been built up over the last few years. So I think it's going to. There may be some shifts, and the mainstream will certainly pick on one particular sale or one particular area or one particular known personality that's left and gone and bought and overpaid because they're just too silly to do any good research and follow us on DFA and all our other social media platforms to get informed, Martin. I don't know what it's going to be, but we're going to get some of that in the future.
No, well, I think you're right about that. And, what I think is the truth here is that there is still a lot of one-sided reporting going on. I mean, let's be honest. There was a very interesting report from the Reserve Bank Bulletin last Friday, right? So they actually dissected the rental market and they really spun a spotlight on the fact that rental vacancies are up and rentals themselves are down, particularly in Melbourne and Sydney, right? Now, that was a very important story. Didn't get much coverage, I noticed, in the mainstream, whereas Westpac's revised thoughts about property prices up 15% next year got a massive run. So there's a natural bias, it seems to me, to sort of picking, some stories rather than other stories. There was another report that came out today that highlighted the fact that the migration is now pretty much stalled. So effectively, we had a huge swamping in of people over the last two or three years, which obviously put some demand on property. But that migration stopped now. And therefore, the supply-demand disequilibrium that we've got, however you look at it, is just way, way over where many people are actually, recognising it to be. And I come back to my 1.2 million. There's probably 1.2 million spare properties across Australia and probably more that are actually held by people who are deliberately keeping them empty. For example, down and around Docklands, I think there are quite a few down around there where international buyers bought them and are just holding them. Well, there is a huge issue with regards to too much property, not enough buyers.
Well, that's correct. And that's what I've been saying to a number of my clients as well as colleagues when we have our discussions, and that is don't be persuaded. Don't be too easily persuaded by what the mainstream put out, because or by what you see on the portals. Let's face it, if you're a developer, let's say, and you're holding to 15, 20 apartments, or five or six or seven townhouses in the medium density development, or even freestanding homes, and they're empty, you're not going to advertise all of them. You're only going to advertise one or two, maybe three. Or if you're a real estate agent, if you're smart and you're holding on to seven, eight, or nine properties in an area which are very similar, very like property, Well, you're not going to put them all on the rental market. You're going to explain to your landlords, you know, we're, this is what we're going to do in order not to show those signs of desperation. And because they're doing that, even the ones that are being transacted in terms of, you know, up on the rental market, it really shows a lesser volume of what's really happening, therefore translates to not as much pain as what people are really suffering. Then, as you said, we've discussed many times for many years the fact that there are so many properties that are held vacant, and Catherine Cashmore has done a brilliant paper on this, has written some excellent material on this, and how they were investigating all around Australia how many are vacant, and the means and ways which they were able to determine properties that were vacant long term. So there's all these anomalies, hence the reason why I've been saying for years as well, there's just such an oversupply, and it's going to take us years to absorb all that oversupply to get to reality. So it's you've really got to take this report with a massive pill, because otherwise you just end up with a massive migraine if you don't.
I like that one. Very good. And look, the other point is, and again, my contacts that I had across the industry are making the point that there is a lot of property that's not formally listed, but the local agents know that there are vendors who would be willing to sell at a reasonable, positive price.
Yeah, and look, let me just cut you, Martin, a bit before I lose my train of thought. A lot of the agents that I deal with in the searches, I totally concur with you, but the reason why a lot of these properties aren't on the market is because the vendors are just asking way too much. So, and the other reason is they're not, the vendors of the smarter ones have turned around and say, well, okay, if you want to list my property for sale, this is what I want, and you fork out the vendor paid advertising or the marketing fee if you really believe you can get it. And that's how it should be anyway. That's what they should be doing anyway. But we could talk about that till the cows come home, because that's one of my pet hates is vendor paid advertising. One, and secondly, this all these properties that are. I get texts about probably 5 or 6 texts every hour and messages every hour just about every hour of the day telling me this is off market, we've got this off market and this is off market and that. Yeah, but they're not negotiable, they're not commercial, and I prefer to wait for them now in this market. I prefer them to go to auction. Let it get passed in at the silly dollars that you want, and then we'll negotiate afterwards at a much more reasonable price. I mean, that's a strategy that I predominantly am adopting now, and that's a strategy that I know a lot of other people chose to adopt as well. Because even the price guide and the actual sale, as you and I know, are 180 degrees apart.
Right. And in fact, you made the point in some notes that you sent me before today that there is a really, really important thing going on here. So the psychology about auctions is changing, isn't it? So as you say, people are sort of, kicking the tires a bit, but don't expect really to, go through until afterwards, and then the negotiation really starts.
Yeah. And it was there was one sale on the weekend, one auction on the weekend that there would have been at least 130, 140 people and 7 or so registered bidders. No bid at all. But, I mean, that's been going on. The emotion is gone. And one of the reasons why the emotion is gone is because we don't have the silly money. We don't have the silly money. We don't have although there was a report that came out today that there's been a bit of money laundering going on with some of our banks, but we don't have it as much as what we did last year. Yeah, thank God. But nevertheless, we don't have that silly money that was coming in from overseas, and therefore a lot of that emotion has gone. Secondly, people are going to be weary of, and they've been told by the mortgage brokers, be careful what you pay at auction, because you could do your 10% unless you're prepared to fork up another 3%, 4%, 5% in cash if the valuation comes in short. Because banks aren't doing valuations pre-auction. They want to have a signed contract before they send the valuer out. in order to see if it was, you know, worth what they paid for. So therefore, there's more of a concern now, particularly when the market is going down. And I think a lot of the buyers, Martin, that are in the market now, wanting to buy for whatever reason, they're more educated. They're a lot more educated. And let me say this. It's not all about doom and gloom, because then there was another one of the earlier auctions that I attended on Saturday, went for a couple of $100,000 above what a lot of people expected, what the agent expected. But then again, they did sort of underquote a little bit in comparison to last year. It was still cheaper than last year. However, there were five or six developers, small-time developer builders, fighting for it. And when I spoke to them after the auction, two of them said that they were looking at knocking it down to build something new, because in their minds they still think that the overseas money is going to come. Let me say this to you, it's not coming, not in the near future. It's not coming. It's going to be a long time before it comes.
Right. But nevertheless, you're right that properties that have the potential for redevelopment and, you know, knocking down and putting two or three or four on the same site, they clearly can command a bit of a premium. But I would say they're the exception rather than the rule, although they're often the ones that get reported.
Yeah, well, exactly. And then when I do a bit of background research, we find out, as I post out on Twitter, you know, they're either underquoted. The hedonic is up here. The actual sale price is still down there. And when you look at comparable sales from 6 months ago, there's a stark difference. But I think a lot of it was 50% of the people that were there. When I say 50% of the people that were there, the developers that I was talking to in the morning that were fighting for this property, 50% were still oblivious to the fact that. The Chinese money is not going to come. I mean, I didn't want to bust their little bubble. Each to their own. Let them do their own research. But it was rather bizarre. But because certain sales in that particular pocket in that area demanded high premiums if the property was new. When you dig deeper, when you break it all down, it's a totally different. Totally, totally different story.
Mm. And one of the other story elements is the fact that many more auction prices are now being withheld following the auction. So it's quite hard to actually understand what's going on.
Yeah, and I love this graphs and that Tarek Segal Booker puts up from time to time. And I'll send you a screenshot of another one. I mean, it's something like 38% or something, 38 or 40, 45% of price are withheld. Let me put out a word of advice or a word of warning, whichever way my colleagues would want to take this. Yeah, if you really want people to come and see your property, I think you better start publishing your asking price or your price guide, as opposed to waiting for people to call. Particularly when we're going to end up with a lot more properties on the market in your area for sale. Yeah. I overlook a lot of properties as I'm looking for clients in different regions, and my colleagues also are looking for clients in different regions of Sydney. We just take it at a point that we overlook a lot of it, because even for us doing this full time, you could say that it's fastidious. It's fatiguing to be calling and calling and calling, no answer, no answer, no answer, texting, this and that. That's our job. But we get frustrated. Can you imagine the everyday person that just wants to buy a bloody house and wants to move in before anything else happens in 2020? They just want to get settled. All the frustration that they go through. So for my colleagues that are watching, that are listening out there, start publishing your price guide so that people are more interested. Stop with this bullshit of not publishing price guides and as if that's going to create more attraction for people to come and look at your properties. When more properties are on the market, they're going to go to the ones that they can see. Yep, this fits my category, and this is within my price range. I'll go there. And if they fall in love with the property, well, that's one less buyer in the marketplace that could have come to your open house. Yeah, bit of a tip. So take that as a bit of a tip, a bit of wisdom, you know, and hopefully you'll do a lot better, and you'll get the eyeballs to your property that you're really looking for.
All right. Now, another question I've got for you is auction clearance rates, right? Because, of course, the mainstream media was splurging that Sydney is booming thanks to high auction clearance rates, but it's not quite that simple, is it?
The amount of people that I was speaking to over the on the phone, on text, on email, colleagues and friends, and they're telling me how things are changing, and that my God, the market's booming. I thought shit, there was about 560 properties went up for auction. I really honestly thought they all got sold, Martin. regardless of the fact that I saw quite a few not passed in, I thought maybe I was in a different universe, maybe I was in a different time zone, or look at the actual numbers. The actual numbers from same week, 2019, sales by way of auction, 304. This week, sales by way of auction on Saturday past, by way of auction, 314. And the mainstream media are beating their drum saying, my God, it's happening, we're back on, the market's been. I really believe that our mate Joy from the AFR went and bought himself another barbecue from Barbecues Galore, thinking that he's going to barbecue you and me, Martin.
Well, and look, I have to say that I find the data from SQM much more reliable when it comes to what's really going on with auction clearance rates, right? They're always lower because he actually takes it apart and looks at it. Because what happens is, basically, the initial calculations are only done on reported, right, firstly. And so anything that's not reported, well, you wonder why ones that don't get sold don't tend to get reported as quickly, funnily enough, right? It's the first point. And then the second one is, if you compare this year and last year, I mean, there's almost no difference, right? It's not like we've suddenly got this huge splurge of sales. We're just sort of hanging around where we were last year. And frankly, this whole story is being just taken way too far once again to try and get more people to come back and basically spend their money and, become self-fulfilling. But people need to understand that that's what this is about. This is about positioning. This is about spin. This is about telling a story to try and encourage you to go spend your money.
Yeah, and to go and spend your money, put a noose around your neck and have a mortgage for a death pledge for the rest of your life and your kids and your grandchildren on top of that. But, this week's going to be the interesting week, Martin, with regards to auction numbers, because there's over 700 auctions that are going to go under the hammer this weekend. I dare say we'll have a retraction of about 150 to 200. They'll pull over by the wayside. They'll either get pulled or they'll get sold pre-auction. But nevertheless, it's an interesting number. It seems to be that there's a lot of confidence in the marketplace. But I sort of tend to think that it's more the agents pushing that confidence so I can get a quicker commission. As I've always said, it's not necessarily the best way of to take a property to market. Maybe if it's a unique property, but that's another video for another day. We can go toe to toe with a lot of anybody else that promotes auction as being the best way to sell property. So next week is going to be the interesting week. But notice how now there's a lot more, and it seems that spring confidence is now kicking in. Now all we need is the spring confidence for the for sale numbers to start rising. So what we've had over the last 6 weeks, where there's been massive amounts of propaganda by the mainstream and the banks and everybody else tied up with them, and it's brought people into the market that could buy. They've bought thinking that prices are going to go up. Well, I still don't see the pool of buyers increasing. If anything, it's been decreasing and decreasing and decreasing. And this is when I'm seeing, and my colleagues, we're seeing properties that are being listed or days on market are starting to stretch out again. They get passed in at auction, they go to a private treaty campaign, and they lag on. And in some suburbs, I'm now, some properties are getting close to 90 days on market, which, say 4 months ago, 3 months ago, that would have been a 28-day average on market, and now they're stretching out to 90 days. But the more listings that come on, the more that the whole vehicle is just going to come to a grinding halt. And obviously buyers are going to have a lot more choice. And like I said before in a previous podcast, all it takes is 2 to 3 more properties to be listed on market in every suburb of Sydney, and you've got major problems, more than what a lot of vendors are facing now.
Yeah, but then if you read the AFR article, which was entitled "Why the Housing Market Continues to Baffle the Pessimists," then you get a whole different story.
Here we have somebody else is throwing the hat, another reporter is throwing the hat in the ring and is calling Westpac a bear. So we've got two reporters in the AFR now. One's calling CBA a bear, and the other one's calling Westpac a bear as well. So you've got my meme there as to this is a bear.
That's not a bear. This is a bear. Yes.
Yeah, that's it. So we'll go with that, Martin, because there's not much more to be said. When you read the whole article, I know there's a paywall on it, but when you do get a chance to read it, it's calling the Westpac a bear, or the prediction's bearish. And of course they're going to say the market's changing. They need clients. How else are they going to make money if they don't lend money?
Yeah. Well, the problem we've got with all this is that it is very, very hard to get good information, right? And let me tell you a little story. I did a bit of work this week looking at the information that was publicly available for a particular postcode. It was Cronulla, actually, in Sydney, right? And I looked at the various portals to try and actually understand what they were saying. And then I went and looked at the sold information that's available from the New South Wales portal, right, which is actually the final source of truth, right? And what's really interesting that some of the portals are quoting median prices that are really quite close to what sold up till a couple of months ago, because it takes time to come through, right? But a couple of the other ones were just not just 5%, they were way off. They're 30% off. And yet, those portals are the very portals that most people who are thinking of buying will be going and visiting, right? And, of course, they're always over. So I don't understand how the portals can be reporting such higher prices relative to what I think is reality. And then, you've picked up another example yourself to show the same point, that, in fact, the asking price, the calculated, suggested asking price, is just way different from reality.
And yet the mainstream, the RBA, the banking institutions, the financial institutions, the mainstream media, they rely on these so-called portals that are supposed to have the most sophisticated software to predict the values of properties, like the our friends from the hedonics. It's absolutely flabbergasting what you see, and that is why when you're on the ground you see the real story, and when you go to the back end you can see the real story. Unfortunately, a lot of the people that are buying don't research, don't buy. There's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of pressure. Easy money. What else can you throw into the pot? And at the end you've got a stew that just becomes unpalatable, because it's a stew of debt that more than likely won't be paid off. look, I just, the pain hasn't even started. And this is why, you know, I like reading a lot of stuff that Tarek puts out. And that's because, you know, he and I are on par with a lot of things. And we chat as well, like with yourself and Lindsay David. And, you know, we talk about the fact that the pain hasn't even started, Martin. It really hasn't even started, because everything is being thrown at this to cushion the blow. But no matter how many mattresses you put at the bottom of the ravine, that train is going to crash and burn. Yeah, it's simple as that.
Well, it is coming home to roost, right? Because we know that the banks now are starting to phone mortgage holders who've had these principal interest holidays, right? And some of them are now finding that they're having quite a difficult conversation about maybe you should sell the property, right? And so that's one reason why I think there'll be more properties coming on stream over the next 2 to 3 months. There'll be a few more who will be given further 4 months of breathing space. But, you know, if they're in the situation where they're now reliant on JobKeeper or even JobSeeker, those payments are being trimmed back. And so essentially they're going to be finding it much more difficult to be able to actually negotiate ahead. And then you've got some other ones who took the holiday, didn't really need to take it, but they did, and now they're starting to repay. So the story will be, oh, well, everybody's now back and paying those mortgages, everything's fine, right? But that's only a small proportion of the total. We've got this very significant runt of people who will not be able to start repaying their mortgages and will be under huge pressure to sell. Right? At a time with, you know, just to be clear again, at a time when there are very few international buyers active in the market, when there are very few property investors active in the market, where there are some first-time buyers who are having their arms twisted by the government to buy, and there are a few people up-trading and down-trading, but not many, right? The math doesn't work on a supply-demand equilibrium basis, right? We have too much supply, not enough demand, not enough buyers, too many sellers, prices will fall.
Yeah, and it's only going to take a few more properties per suburb to even, you know, continue that drop. The balance is just going to be weighed more heavily on properties on market than actual buyers on hand. And when you talk to the mortgage brokers, they'll tell you as well that the hoops and the hurdles that the clients have to that face in order to get a loan. Yes, it's cheaper money, but there are a lot of impediments just to qualify for loans. But again, Martin, the other thing that one of the things that on that and because I talked to a lot of the legal eagles about the place, and you know, look, at the end of the day, a lot of these people that are finding themselves underwater already, they know that they're going to lose their homes. So if they can stay in their homes for a lot longer until the bank kicks them out, it's going to be 12, 18 months before they get turfed out. In the meantime, they're not paying the debt, they're not paying the loans, they're not paying the loans on the one hand, they're getting money from the government on the other hand. And so it's just you're living rent-free, mortgage-free for that period of time until the bank really takes possession of the property, because the legal system is not moving as quickly as it was pre-COVID. It's really, really slowed down. Everything's backlogged. And I get so many stories in other areas. When I talk to my legal friends, they tell me whether it be criminal, whether it be property, criminal, family, whatever. It's just this backlog before things get done, and people are really put out. But that's where we are at the moment. So they're in a hurry to move out. Would you be in a hurry to move out if you knew you were underwater? You're going to lose it anyway?
No, absolutely not. And that mirrors precisely the experience in the US, where, you know, many people just hung on, and 3, 4, 5 years later, they're still in the property, not paying any mortgage. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the same things. And the final point to add to that is we also know that there are more SMEs now who are getting very close to the edge. They've extended the no worry, you can go on trading in if you're,
insolvent.
Insolvent, right, until the end of the year. But that's just pushing it out just a little bit further, right, because essentially that means that as at 1 January or whenever it will be, we're going to see more small businesses effectively fall over. Some of those small businesses secure their business against property. So there's another downdraft there in terms of more property coming on the market after Christmas, after the new year. So the more you sort of push these support mechanisms out into the future, all you're doing is just shifting the problem. You're not solving the problem. And so, you know, another reason why I think we should be very cautious on property prices and why both you and I believe that the trajectory is down, not up.
Yeah, it's as I said, as we spoke about before, Martin, the thing with the businesses, with the SMEs, I've known for months. I've known for months what they're doing, and that is to be not all, but quite a number of the business owners that I've spoken to, quite a number of the liquidators and the receivers that I've spoken to, they're being very candid with me, and they've said, you know, that they're just selling off as much as they can out of the inventory whilst this moratorium is in place. And then, you know, at the end of the day, whether their creditors get 10 cents in the dollar, 20 cents in the dollar, 30 cents, 5 cents, 1 cent in the dollar, they're going to go bust. So might as well try to offload as much of the inventory as they can, or before this whole thing really starts falling in a heap, as I think, again, Tara, calling it the pulse economy, or words to that effect. He used another term that just slipped my mind, but it's it is a pulse economy. It is we're stoking or building and projecting for this U-shaped recovery or whatever shape recovery they want to project towards, but it's not there. The fundamental foundations are not there. They're not there in the property market. The fundamental foundations aren't there with the economic, the economy overall, the national economy overall. And if the foundation is weak, well, what's going to happen? It's just got to collapse so that you can rebuild it.
Well, extend and pretend is what they call it, right? And that's what we're in the middle of at the moment, right? But don't worry, Frydenberg's going to deliver a budget in a couple of weeks, and there will be a magic rabbit produced out of the hat, and suddenly we'll be in the sunlit uplands again.
Well, I prefer, I prefer that he pulls not a rabbit out of the hat, but I prefer that he pulls a koala. it's going to get it'll get international coverage. Now, rabbit, everybody does this rabbit, trick. I want a koala come out of the hat, or a goanna or something. I don't know, something different. Spice it up a bit.
Yeah, yes, okay. I can't imagine the treasurer spicing anything up, but that's another story. Okay, last question. Margaret Street at Roseville. What's the story on that?
Yes, on the ground, property in focus. It's the old saying, no pain, no gain. Well, this one was lots of pain and no gain. It got bought, as the hedonic tells us, got bought for $2,750,000 not too long ago. I can say that contracts have been officially exchanged. And it got sold for just a little bit over $2,300,000. There's about $450,000 capital loss on that property. It's strangely enough, even the hedonic didn't value it at the price that they paid for it originally anyway. But when you start taking into account, Martin, and this is one of the other reports that came out in a domain publication about somebody that lost, I think it was the Inner West, $8,000 from when they purchased the property. They lost $8,000. If it was a real property reporter, if Domain would really go out and hire real property reporters, the reporter would have also added the other losses that the individual incurred, and that is the stamp duty, the interest paid on that property or that loan over the period of time that it was held, any further inclusions that they may have added to the property, any renovation work, anything of the like. And in this particular property, some of the Twitterers actually posted out that there was some renovation works done to the property, and the actual cost of the sale And then in the article, it said words to the effect that sold it to obviously they were going to buy another property, and they sold in a falling market, they were going to buy into a falling market. And again, the reporter did not report the fact that when they jump back into the market, that's another load of stamp duty that they got to pay, and potentially there'll be some things that they'll probably want fixed or changed in the property when they move in as well. So all these added costs that people are foregoing. But then again, how much pain are they going, and how much pain are they prepared to give away in order to get out before it becomes to a point where there's a mortgage in possession, or they're just so deep underwater that it starts affecting all their other assets, potential assets, and everything else that they may have. So it's an interesting scenario. So that's one of the things, that's one of the properties that we wanted to bring to the viewers, our property in focus. I'll try to get one from the West for next time around, and see how we go with that.
Well, 2 points to make. The first is, of course, there's also a question of inflation, right? Because when I show the trajectory of home prices, I also show an inflation-adjusted trajectory of home prices, right? Which has been ticking around, 2 or 3%, depending on which year, right? A bit lower now. But, of course, people forget that, in fact, inflation has been eroding value over the last few years, right? So, in other words, if you sell at a loss today compared with 5 years ago, what you've actually done is made that loss plus all the extra fees that you've covered, plus the fact inflation has eroded even more.
So exactly.
Right, and people never do that, but they should include that if they really want to get a view. Second point is, it's really very interesting. I had a number of people on Twitter complaining about the way that I talk about mortgage stress and the fact that there are some more affluent postcodes where there is mortgage stress, right? And Armadale down in Victoria was the one that people were talking about. I said, I can't possibly any mortgage stress down there because there's old money there, right? I just want to remind people because you've sort of touched on it, that a lot of people have multiple properties and multiple mortgages all cross-leveraged, right?
That's
and
great.
When things are going well, the dominoes go in the right direction. But as soon as the dominoes start to fall, it's often those people who are highly leveraged across multiple properties, investment properties and unoccupied properties, that have the biggest issue, first point. Second point is, quite often, those people have a big lifestyle to go with the big incomes, right? And so they're not used to suddenly finding that actually, oh, hang on a moment, I've got to pull my belt in a bit because this isn't working. So not only do they have this pressure of multiple properties to deal with, but they've also got this new world that they're in where they're actually in a much more financial pain than they used to. And those are the things that people just have not got their head around. So I just despair sometimes with, I don't know what more I can do to paint a better picture, a more powerful picture of why people who are more affluent are now getting into difficulty. But it's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Well, that's right. And a lot of people don't forget the complexities of some of the mortgages that people get into. There's the how many boomers actually put up their homes as equity in their properties as deposits for their children or even their grandchildren. So all this cross collateralization and everything. Nobody, not everybody, does things to protect themselves. A lot of it's on emotion. A lot of it's on a very very thin foundation that could light up at the drop of a hat, and just everything goes. I've had a few people on Twitter as well that have. Of late, like yourself, that have been critical, criticizing, you only report bad stuff. I'm just reporting where I'm going because that's where I am at the time. I mean, I can't attend every single bloody auction in Sydney. I'm there because I'm actually there, creating a bit of entertainment, creating a bit of knowledge and putting it out there because I'm there. I'm there for a number of reasons. One, because I'm trying to peg the value of land in certain areas because there are properties that I'm looking at for clients. But let me say this. to these people that have been saying and have been critical on yourself and myself on Twitter, and that is, you make money when you buy, not when you sell. That was something that was taught to me by an old Jewish mentor business mentor in my early 20s. Said, you make money when you buy, not when you sell. So, you know, And that's what we're out there. We're putting it, you know, we're putting out there. Yeah, there are people that will make money after buying property now. They will make money in the future. But why? Because they didn't pay the inflated prices that the agents wanted. They paid, they looked for the properties that people were hurting, that people were prepared to chop a couple of the limbs off to get rid of it right now, rather than lose the whole heart and everything else and go kaput. You buy well, or you buy with something that you can. There's an upside to it. You can turn a two-bedroom duplex into a three-bedroom but the agent's selling it as a two-bedroom. They wouldn't know what to do with it. They wouldn't know how to do it. You buy something that's going to mitigate that further drop. Yeah, certain suburbs, certain areas have a flaw, and we're reaching those flaws now in certain areas. But the question is how stable are those flaws? I believe that although certain suburbs have come to a floor, there's still an instability, because the macro scale, the greater picture, is that our economy is not doing too well. So for now, it may be stable in certain suburbs and others are still dropping. So all these things are at play. And people just think that it's one tweet or one thing or one post or one idea, or there's only one way to buy or there's only one way to sell. I just don't get it sometimes, Martin. But look, we just keep on doing what we're doing and putting out information to hopefully people can gather and can better equip themselves when they do buy, or better equip themselves when they do sell. And if you don't know how to do it, if you want a bit of assistance, reach out.
Yeah. Well, there is the old saying about he who has ears, let him hear, right? And that's an important point, because we can go on saying all of our good stuff and trying to alert people, but if people don't want to listen, they've got fingers in their ears going, la, 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 everything's fine. They might come to regret it a bit later. So, you know, we will talk to those who want to listen, and hopefully we can provide a little bit of insight and a perspective against which they're thinking about things to make better decisions, which I guess is what this is all about. And I should say, Edwin, your clock is now 7 minutes to midnight. It's been there the whole time.
It's been there. I wound it up last time and then it just stopped there. It just keeps on stopping there. I keep on winding it up to see if we can go past 12, but it just stays there, Martin. It's the doomsday clock is just telling me something, that we're getting closer to the end.
Yeah, what you need is a Hedonic clock.
Oh, yes.
Right.
I said to one of my colleagues that we attended a property. I know why I'm sharing this. I've just got a lot in my mind, so I'll just share it anyway. I was going to get a red cap, and I was going to get embroidered at the front, make the hedonic great again.
That sounds like something we should definitely be pursuing. Edwin, I appreciate your time once again. Always great to catch up with you. And we'll put all the links and things below as normal. And we'll do the same again next week. Take care.
Definitely. All the best, and all the best to everybody out there in the big wide world of YouTube and Twitter and all the other platforms.
Thanks, Edwin.